All right, so get this. We're diving into this case today, and well, a woman used her deceased husband's frozen sperm to have twins after he passed away.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and then things got really interesting
I bet.
when it came to Social Security benefits for the kids.
Oh.
It's like some kind of sci-fi novel, you know,
Oh, yeah.
collided head-on with the law.
Yeah.
So we're talking Astru V. Capato,
Okay.
a 2012 Supreme Court decision that really makes you think about how technology changes everything, even the definition of family. You
Wow.
ready to unpack this
Okay.
one?
Absolutely. This case is a real curveball when it comes to, the intersection of family law and reproductive technology.
So to set the scene, we have Robert Capato,
Okay.
who was diagnosed with cancer and thinking ahead, froze his sperms.
Smart.
Sadly, he passed away. But his wife, Karen, later used that sperm to have twins via IVF.
Oh, wow.
Talk about a bittersweet victory.
It is. And this is where the Social Security Administration, the SSA, steps in and says, hold on a second.
Uh-oh.
They denied the twins survivor benefits,
Wait.
citing Florida law at the time, which said you had to be conceived before the parent died to inherit.
No.
The SSA stance was that survivor benefits are for kids who actually lost financial support when their parent died, not those born later.
Okay, that makes sense on the surface. But it gets even more complicated because the Third Circuit Court actually sided with Karen.
Interesting.
They argued that biological children of married parents should automatically qualify, regardless of when they were conceived.
Right. And this is a classic example of what we call a circuit split.
Okay.
Different courts around the country disagreed on how to interpret the law in this situation.
Yeah.
Some, like the Third Circuit, focused on the biological connection, while others insisted that state inheritance laws should be the deciding factor.
Yeah.
This kind of legal tug of war is often a one-way ticket to a Supreme Court showdown.
A showdown. It was so this all boiled down to one essential question.
What's that?
Does the Social Security Act's definition of child include those conceived posthumously, or does state law have the final say?
Exactly. And this is where the arguments on both sides get really interesting.
Yeah.
The SSA stuck to their guns, arguing that the Social Security Act clearly states you need to follow state inheritance rules to be eligible for benefits.
Okay.
They emphasized that Congress intended these benefits for children who the deceased parent actually supported during their lifetime.
Makes sense.
Imagine the potential chaos if people could make claims decades later.
Oh, yeah.
Someone could theoretically use frozen sperm or embryos far into the future, creating a real logistical and financial headache for the system.
Yeah, I see their point. But what about the Capato's argument?
Well,
Denying benefits to children who are biologically related to the deceased parent seems pretty harsh.
they argued that the law should be interpreted simply.
Okay.
Biological child means biological child, period.
Okay.
They questioned why state law should have the power to override federal benefits in cases where the child is undeniably related to the deceased parent.
Yeah.
They also raised the issue of potential discrimination against children conceived through IVF.
Okay, so we've got these two compelling arguments going head to head.
Yes.
What did the Supreme Court ultimately decide?
Well, everyone was waiting with bated breath, and in a 9-0 decision, the Supreme Court sided with the SSA.
Wow, a unanimous decision. What was the reasoning behind that?
Justice Ginsburg, who wrote the majority opinion,
Okay.
highlighted how the different parts of the Social Security Act work together.
Okay.
They determined that Congress did, in fact, intend for state law to play a role in determining eligibility for survivor benefits.
So the SSA's interpretation won the day, but how did they address the Capato's concerns about discrimination?
The court wasn't swayed by that argument.
Okay.
They clarified that the key difference here wasn't between biological and non-biological children, but rather between children the deceased parent could have supported versus those they couldn't have. They emphasized that the purpose of survivor benefits is to replace the financial support that was lost when the parent died. Since Robert Capato passed away before the twins were conceived, he couldn't have provided them with financial support during his lifetime.
So essentially, they drew a line in the sand saying the timing of conception specifically, whether it was before or after the parent's death, was a critical factor in determining eligibility for benefits.
Precisely. And this is where things get even more interesting because the court's decision didn't shut the door completely on posthumously conceived children receiving benefits.
I will.
They basically said, hey, new reproductive tech is great, but it's up to Congress to update the laws, not us.
Oh, so passing the buck.
They acknowledged that advancements like IVF have created new family structures and that the law may need to adapt to reflect these changes.
So the ball is in Congress's court. Now, This is getting pretty complex, but you're doing a great job breaking it down for us.
I'm glad to hear that we've only just begun to scratch the surface of this fascinating case.
There's so much more to unpack here. We'll delve deeper into the implications of Astru v. Capato and explore those broader questions about technology, family law, and the future of our legal system in the next part of our deep dive. Welcome back. We're deep in the weeds of Astru v. Capato, a case that really exposes that friction between, you know, fast-evolving reproductive tech and the sometimes slower-moving legal system.
It's a classic case of the law playing catch-up.
Yeah.
You know, the ability to have children after a parent's death throws a real wrench into those traditional legal concepts of family and inheritance.
So we left off with the Supreme Court siding with the Social Security Administration and emphasizing the importance of state law in determining eligibility for survivor benefits. What are some of the key takeaways from this decision, especially for people who might be facing similar situations?
The biggest takeaway is that even when dealing with federal benefits, like Social Security or your state's laws can have a huge impact. The court made it clear that the SSA was within its rights to rely on Florida's inheritance laws to determine whether the Capato twins qualified for benefits.
So it's not just a matter of being biologically related to the deceased parent.
Right. It's about how your state legally recognizes that relationship when it comes to inheritance.
Okay.
This case throws a huge spotlight on the importance of understanding your state's specific laws.
Yeah.
Especially in situations involving posthumous conception.
That sounds like a recipe for a legal headache.
It can be, which is why consulting with an experienced legal professional is crucial.
For sure.
Estate planning and reproductive decisions are intertwined in ways we never could have imagined a few decades ago. This case underscores the need for careful planning and a clear understanding of both state and federal law.
Okay, state law is clearly a big factor here. Anything else our listeners should be taking away from this case?
Remember Chevron deference, that principle we talked about earlier?
Yep.
Well, this case really highlights its significance. The Supreme Court upheld the SSA's interpretation of the Social Security Act, even though there were compelling arguments on both sides.
Right. So it's not just about what the law says, but how the agencies responsible for enforcing those laws interpret them.
Exactly. Understanding agency interpretations and internal policies can be incredibly valuable in navigating complex legal landscapes like this one. It's another reason why having expert legal counsel can make a world of difference.
Right. So state law and agency interpretation are crucial.
Yeah.
What about the broader implications of Astru v. Capato? It seems like this case goes beyond just Social Security benefits.
Absolutely. Astru v. Capato throws open a Pandora's box of questions about the future of family law in the age of assisted reproductive technology.
Oh, okay.
We're talking inheritance, parental rights, even the very definition of family.
Let's crack open that box.
Okay.
What are some of those big questions that this case raises?
Well, for starters, it makes us think about the rights of posthumously conceived children. If they can't inherit Social Security benefits in certain situations, what other rights might they be denied? What about inheriting from a parent's estate? What about things like health insurance coverage or even citizenship rights?
It's almost as if we're defining legal personhood for a whole new category of children.
Precisely. And then there are questions about the rights and responsibilities of the surviving parent. Can they make decisions on behalf of a child who was conceived after the other parent's death?
Yeah.
Do they have sole custody rights? What happens if there is a disagreement with the deceased parent's family?
Things could get messy fast.
They certainly could. And this case also forces us to confront uncomfortable ethical dilemmas about the use of reproductive technology. It's one thing to use someone's genetic material while they're alive, but what about after they're gone, even if they gave consent beforehand? What are the psychological impacts on children who know they were conceived this way? And what about the potential for exploitation or abuse of these technologies?
So we're not just talking about legal precedents, but ethical considerations as well. Astru v. Capato seems to be touching a nerve in our society, forcing us to rethink what it means to be a family in the 21st century.
You hit the nail on the head. This case is a wake-up call, reminding us that technology often outpaces the law. We're living in a world where science can achieve things that the law hasn't even begun to contemplate. Astru v. Capato is a powerful example of that tension.
This is all incredibly thought-provoking.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure our listeners are eager to hear more about the specific legal and ethical challenges that Astru v. Capato presents. We'll continue our deep dive into this fascinating case and explore those challenges in the final part of our episode. Welcome back to the Deep Dive. We've been exploring Astru V. Capato, a case that really throws a spotlight on how reproductive technology is shaking things up in the legal world.
It's a prime example of what we call, law lag, where the legal system is trying to play catch up with the rapid pace of scientific advancement.
Exactly. And this case really pushes us to think about the big picture implications beyond just Social Security benefits.
Absolutely. Astru V. Capato opens up a Pandora's box of questions about inheritance, parental rights, and even the very definition of family.
Okay, so let's unpack that Pandora's box, shall we? What are some of those big questions this case raises?
Well, for starters, it makes us think about the rights of posthumously conceived children if they can't inherit Social Security benefits in certain situations. What other rights might they be denied? What about inheriting from a parent's estate? What about things like health insurance coverage or citizenship rights?
It's like we're navigating this whole new realm of legal personhood for children who are conceived after the death of a parent.
Precisely. And then there are questions about the rights of the surviving parent. Can they make decisions on behalf of a child who was conceived after the other parent's death? Do they have sole custody rights? What happens if there's a disagreement with the deceased parent's family?
It gets complicated quickly, especially when you factor in the emotional weight of these situations.
Yeah.
And let's not forget the ethical considerations here.
You're absolutely right. This case raises profound ethical dilemmas about the use of reproductive technology. Is it ethical to use someone's genetic material after they're gone, even if they consented beforehand? What are the potential psychological impacts on children who know they were conceived this way?
It's like we're stepping into this uncharted territory where the legal, ethical, and emotional complexities are all intertwined.
Exactly. And this is where we really need a robust public conversation. We need lawyers, ethicists, medical professionals, and everyday citizens to come together and grapple with these tough questions. We need to figure out how to balance the rights of individuals with the potential societal impacts of these powerful technologies.
It sounds like Astru V. Capato is just the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah.
What advice would you give to our listeners, many of whom are legal professionals themselves who might be grappling with these very issues?
I think the key takeaway is this: be informed, be proactive, and be prepared to ask tough questions if you're dealing with the legal ramifications of posthumous conception, whether personally or professionally. It's crucial to stay informed about the evolving legal landscape and seek guidance from experienced legal professionals who can help navigate this complex terrain.
Great advice. So as we wrap up our deep dive into Astru V. Capato, what's the one thing you hope our listeners will take away from this conversation?
I'd say this technology is reshaping our world at an unprecedented pace, and the law is constantly struggling to keep up. Astru V. Capato is a powerful reminder that we need to be having these conversations, asking these tough questions, and working together to ensure that our legal frameworks can adapt to the realities of our ever-evolving world.
Well said. This case serves as a stark reminder that what seemed like science fiction just a few decades ago is now our reality. We need to approach these complex issues with open minds, informed perspectives, and a willingness to adapt our legal and ethical frameworks to meet the challenges of our time. And remember, folks, this is just one case, one snapshot of the evolving legal landscape. Stay engaged, stay curious, and join us next time on The Deep Dive as we continue to explore the frontiers of law, technology, and society.